The druggist's hands disappeared from the counter. Then they reappeared. They disappeared and reappeared 2, 3, 4 times. And soon Hermie was looking at a collection of different sized and different colored little packages that his mother could make one hell of an Afghan out of. There were enough rubbers there for the entire 2nd Marines. "There's a number to choose from, you know." The old man said that flatly, as if everyone in the world knew it. Hermie was unsettled. For a moment, he thought he felt his mother looking over his shoulder. He looked, but she was gone. She could do that. He looked back at the druggist. "Do you have to flash him around?" There was still no expression on Mr. Sanders' face. "Which is your usual?" Hermie was standing square at the Maginot line. In front of him was a collection of dandy little packages, all neatly sealed and wrapped and alive with raw sex. Behind him was the callow youth. He had just been asked to make his selection from the crown jewels of England. With so little experience in those matters, he decided to go with his favorite color. "The blue ones," he began to. And the heat of his hand was beginning to do away with his ice cream as though a disintegrator gun were working on it. A few drops of melted strawberry plopped onto his sneakers. All of him was melting. Mr. Sanders pushed the blue packages toward Hermie as if he were betting chips in a poker game. "How many would you like?" Another question began to boggle the mind. "How many?" "Oh, well, take a shot at it." "Oh, 3 dozen. The druggist almost smiled, but not quite. He was playing Hermie like a trout, in a shallow stream, in a net. "Planning a big night?" "Just the usual." It had gotten him this far, so why not try it again? The dull yellow of the telegram caught his eye. It was behind the bottle and had been cruelly crumpled and then painfully smoothed out. "We regret to inform you that your husband..." The cold message sank sinkingly into Hermie's mind like rain on a sponge. There was a sound behind him, a door opening. He turned. Dorothy was in the room. She smiled at him, a smile of recognition. But her eyes were damp and red, and she wore a look of lonely vulnerability. So much so that Hermie wanted to take her in his arms and cup her cheek in his hand, as his mother used to do with him whenever he came home crying over something that was too much for him. Slowly, regularly, she kept running a brush through her hair, a small gesture of femininity, something to hang on to do, to stay sane. "Hello, Hermie." "Hi." "I don't look very nice, do I?" She moved past him, tragically beautiful. Little girl lost in a fluffy pink robe. "I think you do." "Oh, I think I don't." She smiled at him again, a searchlight in the dark. A moment of endless silence drifted by, during which she brushed her hair to a princess luster. Then she was over at the phonograph, placing the needle back at the beginning of the still-spinning record. The voice was a woman's, and for a moment, because her back was turned to him, Hermie thought it was Dorothy singing. The song was soft and torchy, conjuring up every vision Hermie had ever had of those sad ladies singing, of love gone by or lost, accompanied only by the aging male piano player whose fingers idled the ivories while a cigarette dangled dry on his lips, and while a shot of booze sat waiting for him on top of his piano. And, from time to time, a silent but understanding waiter would pass by and keep the booze glass full. Real, unreal. Real, unreal. "Last night I started out happy. Last night my heart was so gay. Last night I found myself dancing in my favorite cabaret. You were completely forgotten, just an affair of the past. Then suddenly something happened to me, and I found my heart beating, oh, so fast." It was their song. Dorothy's and Pete's. And if Dorothy was beyond crying, Hermie had not yet arrived at that point. And his vision turned blurry because he was looking at her from somewhere in the rain. He watched her lay the hairbrush aside and begin to sway back and forth, over and again, as if the song were a measure of the distance between love and death, and she the calculator of the impossible separation.